This is HPR episode 2454 entitled, The Alien Brothers Podcast, S01E02, Strictly Hacking. It is hosted by The Alien Brothers Podcast, ABP, and is about 106 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Casper and Rutiger discuss the Uber hacks, and the Intel V known and unknown vulnerabilities.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Alien Brothers Podcast with Casper and Rutiger.
Well, welcome, listeners.
Welcome, listeners. Welcome to the second episode of the Alien Brothers Podcast. Thank you for joining us once again.
By that, you mean second squared episode. You mean the fourth episode of the Alien Brothers Podcast. Don't you, Casper?
Rutiger, I thought we talked about this, that this was the second episode.
Okay. Well, I misinterpreted it. See, listener, what happened, what you don't know, but I'm going to share with you, and for that reason, I envy you right now. As we might have alluded to, no, I guess we wouldn't know, because the only episode that's been posted was the first one we did up at where Bethany or Rehoboth or wherever we were. We recorded We recorded two more episodes during that initial burst that you haven't heard. To you, this is the second episode, and I'm already over explaining this.
Yeah,
as is my wont.
And I'm here to keep you on track, as always.
That's
Casper looking out for you.
That's WONT.
Okay.
Okay.
So moving on. Hacking.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, man.
Happy Thanksgiving to you as well, and happy Thanksgiving to all of the listeners out there. I hope they're having a hacking Thanksgiving. Oh God, that was horrible.
Hacking at that delicious white meat, dark meat. All will be carved.
Yes.
Will be carved. And for our first of this episode, quote unquote, air quotes, two, for our first contest or feedback note from the populace for the episode, I will present it. I, Rutiger, of the Alien Brothers Podcast, if you know and can give us the name of the movie where the line, white, light meat, dark meat, all will be carved, Thanksgiving, comes from, there will be a prize to be determined.
Oh, wow. That's pretty courageous of you there, Rutiger. I didn't know you were going to drop that.
Well, I'm full of surprises.
Oh, well, I'm surprised. Casper is surprised.
Paint you. I have officially painted you surprised.
Yes, sir.
I've colored you surprised.
Color me.
So, as we record this, it's the eve of Thanksgiving, and I have much to be thankful for this year. I know.
As do I, very much indeed.
But I could just keep going and going. But I am, you know, very sincerely thankful for you, Casper. And I have been for many a year, but this year I think our friendship has grown.
Definitely.
Probably in large part spurred by bad behavior on my part. Doesn't kill us makes us stronger is a cliche that sometimes has some truth to it.
Yeah. I heard something recently. Somebody had put something in a song, and it was something by JFK, and they said an error only becomes a mistake if we do not learn by it and correct that. And I take that to be good words to live by.
And by, so could you, what was that quote again?
An error only becomes a mistake.
An error only becomes.
I'm sorry, I wasn't using a Boston accent. I don't really have
chowder.
One.
Chowder.
Chowder. Yeah.
Chowder.
Yeah. The, yeah. In Kennedy voice quotes.
I'll take, or Mayor Quimby. I mean, I'll take, you know, you want to go highbrow. That's the ideal. Yeah, you want to go meta. I'll go midbrow. I'll go lowbrow. I'll do it.
Okay.
I don't care.
That
it doesn't matter to me. Man.
What was lowbrow was that Apple Bing in the background, man. Oh, I've heard that on way too many a network podcast, anything recently. It's everywhere. Can't get rid of it.
Well, I mean, I could mute my system.
If that would
make you happier.
It would. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, let me just do that then.
Sorry. It's
okay.
It's like
it's all muted.
It's a commercial.
It's all better.
It's like a commercial for me.
Okay, well, I know how easily influenced you are by media. who has how many years of Adbusters on his shelf at home, you know. I know what a lemming you are, how easily susceptible you are to the external influence.
So today's topic is called Strictly Hacking. And the reason it's called Strictly Hacking is because we've listened to the feedback from listeners, and they thought that us going on a specific topic is what they want to hear. And this is Hacker Public Radio. So let's talk about hacking. There's been plenty of it in the news lately. I deal with it at work on a constant basis. And we've been talking about it also in conversations non-on-air, so.
Yeah, and before we get into that,
yeah,
since it's my job to keep things off the rails, but this is very important in
yes.
my view, wouldn't, since you referenced feedback, that we've received feedback from, I take it, from the first episode of the Alien Brothers podcast that was posted on Hacker Public Media, is that correct? We receive feedback?
Yes.
You want to talk about that a little bit?
I was shocked. Yeah, we did receive one comment on Hacker Public Radio from someone that has posted a good number of podcasts themselves. They also do GNU New World Order .info. It's GNU World Order .info.
And who is this? Does this someone have a name?
Yes, the tag is Klaatu, Klaatu, or maybe that's pronounced differently.
Klaatu. Klaatu was the emissary from the day the Earth stood still, wasn't it?
Possibly. I definitely
before your time. Although it was remade with Keanu Reeves in the not too distant past. But Klaatu, thank you so much for taking the time. I'm going to admit right now, and I'm ashamed to say this, but I'm going to rectify it. I haven't read the comment yet, even though Casper did send me a link to it and a capture. I happened to be walking or riding the bus at the moment and had only my iPhone, and I wanted to sit down and really give the comment the attention it deserved. But so all I can say for now is thank you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.
And thank you for taking the time to comment. And from the little bit I did read, it seemed complimentary, which, you know, I think we should give ourselves some credit, Casper. I mean, for myself, not to, you know, overblow it, but, you know, this podcast isn't my first rodeo.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. I was very impressed with your previous work.
the depravity, the occasional sound quality, but
a little to the left, a little to the right, and you know, you stand in between the lines.
It is if there were no lines. But thank you, Klaatu, and we will be responding to that soon, and we will also be responding on Hacker Public Radio via a mechanism I'm not clear on yet. Giving access and with the social media accounts we're setting up incrementally, because right now we've acquired them and they're kind of empty right now.
It's a
hit the nail on the head. We snatched them and we got work to do to work with them. And by snatch them, I mean we picked some really lame frickin' like social media aliases and identities just so we didn't have to use ideal ones with like some number embedded in it at the end, which is not acceptable to me. It offends me.
Yeah.
But anyway, so this episode's called The Day the Hacking Died, right?
I was going to say strictly hacking, but yeah.
Okay. Sure. Okay, strictly hacking. So we're going to talk about
hacking.
You, among this crowd of two, Casper, are truly the hacker. Okay.
Well,
you are the hacker.
No,
you are the hacker.
No, I'm not. I've very limited hacking capabilities. I'm aware of software and things to do such activities. I've actually taken a course, the OSCP, the Offensive Security Certification Program, and was unsuccessful in completing the exam. I actually didn't even take it. I was only able to get it's like 33 out of 75 of the computers, and it's very, 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 very difficult. But it's very eye opening to the ways and mechanisms and just everything you can do with very, very little knowledge of, you know, or any previous knowledge.
Well, without, you know, feel free just to move right along from this, but why do you feel you failed the exam?
Oh, well, I didn't take the exam. I took the entire course and I read through the entire book. And then after you do that, you have a lab environment where they give you a certain number of computers to hack into and complete. And at the time, after I finished that and I started hacking the computers, I had gotten, you know, one after another, and you get on a roll, and I had done a number of them, but then there were some that were just, it was like banging your head against a wall. I didn't know even where to begin, because it's kind of left, there's no explanation as to how they give you some tools, but you know that there's a lot left open.
Do you think they throw those in there as distractors to see if you'll wind up wasting a lot of time on them versus cutting bait and moving on, if that's even an option? I don't know anything.
The other thing too is that the ones that I had done, I used the Metasploit tool, and the Metasploit tool makes all of this hacking very, very automatic. If you use Metasploit Metterpreter, you can essentially just run scripts that are automated to take advantage of security vulnerabilities and then gain root access and pretty much do whatever you want. So it was really fun, really educating. But to actually complete the exam, you need to not use the Metaperpeter or Metasploit framework. You can't use it. You have to program your own programs to do that, which is an entirely different level. And it would probably take me about a year solid of studying to complete that. And that's without working or anything, which I couldn't do. I have to have something. I have to have a day job.
Well, I know you'll get it someday without being a script kitty. You got it in you. I know you have it in you.
Yeah. It's, I think the challenge really for me too is also, after working all day, coming home and, doing more computer work is not exactly what you want to do. Especially lately, I've just been kind of tired after I get home. It's fall, it's cold, winter, kind of starting to get the hibernation set in.
Well, my suggestion to that would be, of course, to quit your job and then, you know, either focus on this other task or not. But we've seen how that turns out for me. Of course, I'm not recommending that to anyone. I'm just kidding. Although that's what I do. So, as we've established now, even though I know the phrase script kiddies, I actually ran a outdated WordPress blog once where it was impressed upon me the need to keep internet software platforms patched.
Yes.
Because some script kitty may be using this so-called Metasploit tool or something else that
absolutely
easily defaced and shamed my blog, and which was associated with another podcast, but that's not important. So
you deserved it.
I was begging for it.
You were.
Yeah.
Aren't we all?
Yeah, but we had the last laugh in the end, though. Not really. We didn't.
It's debatable. That's a whole another conversation.
Let me rephrase that. I had a backup of the blog and associated PHP BB system. So after we rebuilt it with fresh software, we could load it back in. So that was
it's
win.
No problem. Yeah.
It should never have been hacked, and it never should have never happened in the first place. Which maybe is the segue into, you know, we talked a little bit before the show about what we were going to attack here, and do you want to start this off with the hacks that are going on right now, including what is going on right now for anyone listening to this in the distant future? Is Uber just announced that they had a big hack. I'm not sure how long ago. I've heard exactly like 30 seconds of content regarding this, but they did the ultimate boo-boo, or not the ultimate, but close to ultimate boo-boo.
No, it's worse than the ultimate boo-boo in my humble opinion.
Well, all I know, and you can correct and expound, is they got hacked. They knew about it. They didn't report it to the public per the standard protocols, and they paid off the hackers to be quiet about it.
Sounds foolproof. What could go wrong?
The story could get out. Maybe by said hackers going to the was it the Post that broke this?
It's pretty much everywhere now.
I think it came from the Waipo. But so yeah, that's, you know, we're being hacked constantly. I just enabled a as a benefit on my job, a monitoring service that they just throw in as a freebie benefit for you that keeps an eye on your accounts. In my case, telling me how how right at the poverty line I am at the moment, but also keeping me up to date on recent attacks and hacks. And yeah, I get pretty much multiple times a day notifications of various organizations getting hacked and the type of information that's getting stolen from them. I'm not going into any detail because our listeners, our target audience, certainly knows these things. How do you want to, what do you want to make of this strictly hacking episode? You had a suggestion I thought was very interesting, which is what drew me into the idea of doing this on Thanksgiving Eve. What have we hacked since like we were kids? Is that kind of what you were getting at there,
Casper? Yeah, there are many ways to attack this, and this is why I thought it would be an interesting episode. It's topical. Uber is in the headlines. 57 million accounts of customers. 57 million customers, and a large number of drivers as well. They hid it for a year. They didn't reveal it to U.S. regulators until now. They had some tricky language at the front that made it sound like they were speaking to investigators at the time of the incident, but that was not related to the incident. That was about something else entirely. So they made it sound like they would smooth it through there. But that's bad. I think if anyone is working in the tech industry, they might be more familiar with the Intel management engine and the security vulnerability that was released just recently with that.
What's up with that?
Have you heard anything about that?
No, why don't you talk about it?
Well, as some people might know, the Intel management engine built into any, pretty much any recent Intel CPU, I think it's been since 2011 or so. They have this Intel management engine. There's been a lot of conspiracies and stuff about its capabilities, et cetera, et cetera. And there's been some conferences also about it. A lot of people, it has access. It has root negative 3 access. So when you log onto your computer, whether it's a PC, Linux, when you log on as root, you have the rights are 0. So if you were to give access to a user, let's say they might have a one or a two.
To clarify, you mean level 0, not 0 as in you have no rights. 0 refers to what's
yes, like from a
user's perspective, what is typically considered the highest level of administrative control.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for clarifying that. So, yes.
You're welcome.
level 0 access is full control, and then if you go down 1, 2, 3, 4, then you get to limited accounts, maybe guest accounts, backup accounts, things of that nature. So anyway, this Intel management engine, this is built into the CPUs. It runs its own web server. It has direct access to the CPU, to the network controller, and it runs on proprietary code. It runs Minix, which is a Linux distribution, and Intel did a recent security audit, and there are some patches for Dell servers at this time. There are no patches for Dell clients. But that recently came out this week.
So the concept here, to break it down, since I'm the straight guy here,
yep,
who doesn't work in tech, is that there's like basically a supervisor component to Intel's CPU or system on chips or whatever you want to consider it. Let's just say they're processors that has a a level of runtime authority that is lower negative three, which really means superior.
It's like God mode for gamers.
And to clarify for anyone, I mean, again, I'm sure our audience would mostly know this. Maybe if I started listening to our fellow podcasts again, I'm ashamed I haven't spent much time with that. I would know more. But the point being, these different levels exist to basically control what an executable. What an executable running as a user or an interactive user can access in terms of system resources, be it files or areas of memory or that sort of thing, to dramatically oversimplify it, right? It's basically what you can access, and that this supervisor on the CPU seems by Intel has disclosed that it disclosed something, I guess, that had not been disclosed previously. I guess, is that part of the story here? That it was not general knowledge that this... Because to me, as a technologist perspective, it makes a lot of technology sense that the thing monitoring... Although, you know, there's a difference in terms of how different supervisors in different contexts work, you know, but the thing monitoring the system holistically certainly has to have the ability to see everything, if not necessarily modify everything, which, you know, I'm speaking generally of something that needs to be spoken of very specifically. But what kind of hubbub is this causing in the everyday IT world where you work as a technologist? You know, you mentioned that they got a patch or a patch coming for servers, which would be an obvious target for rogues.
Yes.
Looking to attack and gain access to that powerful thing, that powerful supervisor. I keep saying supervisor. It's probably is there a correct term I should be using here?
You can use supervisor, hypervisor. You can use whatever you want. I think everyone gets the concept.
Okay. Yeah. So they're patching servers, which would be the first target.
Right.
Although not necessarily if you want to, you know, make it easier than ever to install botnets on, you know,
if you
couple billion clients,
if you break it down to the code, you basically have to get to the root zero level when you are hacking in order to get to the CPU stack. As they say, you got to get to the stack, and then you can run whatever code you want. And that's basically what the... what the process is in any hack or the way that happens, whether it's through memory corruption or binaries. There's many different ways of remotely attacking a computer.
So alongside this Intel announcement regarding current and forthcoming fixes, are there announcements of any actual exploits or nefarious events that have been where this root run level minus three has been exploited? Or are they just saying, hey, it's here, we're fixing some exploit, but don't worry, nothing's gone wrong?
It depends on your take on it. We know that some nation states have started to invest in creating their own hardware. As you know, a lot of military hardware is produced in only secure facilities that don't have access to any foreign entities, and they've done something similar. They found out a while ago that there was a way for governments to disable the Intel management engine. One hacker found that out quite a while ago, and they found a way to disable it with that thing, what they call the High Assurance Program. It's an NSA program. Describes a series of rules for running secure computing platforms. And so there was a bit in the code that was called Reserve Hap. And when they would change that bit, that would allow them to sort of bypass the Intel management engine. So
yeah.
So that's the specific thing. So we know that nation states have built a backdoor into it, at least, or they have the ability to disable it, so they must know that it's there. So once they discovered that, everybody knew that it was there. Now, what research has been done on it and the exploits, I'm not up to date with that, but I would assume that there are exploits, whether they are known or unknown at this time, if there are patches being delivered. So that's just kind of interesting. But I think another topic we focused on as well, to just kind of tie it into like our daily lives, is that people didn't realize how much their conversations and their everyday exchanges with people would then be picked up, recorded, and then transferred into an ad as soon as they would log into, say, Facebook or any other website. You would just load up your browser, and then you've got an ad for something that you just mentioned to somebody in the other room, and it was just you and them, and you happen to have your phone on you.
Yeah, or Alexa, or sorry, meaning Amazon's.
Sorry, don't know that.
I didn't mean to wake you up. Go back to sleep. We're shifting gears here. Are you sure you want to tackle that one? I thought we were doing research for that for another show.
Oh, we don't have to go there, but I just think that that's kind of the same kind of concept, is that everything's being, you know, listened to, and everything has a embedded hack into it, whether it's being used or not. And that drives people to free and open software that they can audit themselves. And that's a movement that I know a lot of people that listen to Hack Republic Radio support, the free and open software foundations.
Indeed. And what percentage of the overall population do you think that represents?
The number of open source. Are you talking about the population that uses it, or the number of
devices? About the number, the one kind of maps to the other in a way. The percentage of the population that frankly has the the percentage of the population that listens effectively to things like Hacker Public Radio. The techniques you're describing to secure, to A, use secure platforms, and B, that aren't susceptible to the ones like the one specific kind of concept where, okay, everything's listening to us, okay, to oversimplify it, and let's just go ahead and say most or all of that data is being sent, processed, sometimes in real time, sometimes in post-process, sometimes archived, sometimes deleted, you know, it does, depending on who gets their hands on it or what its purpose was. But the, you know, I'll jump straight to stop asking rhetorical questions. The percentage of certainly our nation's population that can use, that has the capability, the time, the patience, and the technical knowledge to effectively live their lives running mobile devices, a computer, a cell phone or a smartphone, whatever you want to think of it as, in a secure way is, you know, I would say a fraction of a percent.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you?
I would say some people may say it's near zero, because there's just no way to get away from it. It's pretty much embedded into more and more of our daily lives.
So really, from a certain point of view,
yeah,
a lot of it's about
in my mind when we were discussing this the other night about where we might want to take this, part of it's about education. And for a vast majority of the population, that education boils down to something almost dramatically oversimplified, which is apply patches. I mean, that might sound stupid, but I mean, I'm being dead serious here. You know, don't. Yes. It's not okay to let your 80-something-year-old mother, who loves Windows XP, keep her Windows XP computer if she's using it to shop and do banking transactions or do anything, right? It's not okay. It's sad, okay? But it's not sad. It's the nature of reality. So, yeah, there's the education regarding, you know, malware, phishing, all that. I feel like a lot of education does happen. You know, it could always be improved, but when I lower myself to watch mass media, we're constantly being barraged with high level warnings regarding, remember, and I'm thinking of like watching NBC4, you know, here in Washington D.C. suburban, you yes. know, and this virus was announced today, so remember to do these things, eh?
Right,
always apply
right.
security pay. You know what I'm saying? I mean, we've reached that point in our society where that page goes up on the screen and they go down the bullets and say, you know, never go to a website you don't trust. You know, in other words, you know, if your gut instinct says don't do it, don't do it, right?
Right.
You know, don't, you know, just don't. It's probably not legitimate, and that's where a wise man, D.F. Minsky, wrote in his seminal work, The Nature of Systems, in chapter 8. You know, if you want to keep a computer secure, don't attach it to a network. You know, I have no problem with that.
And now we've learned that there are techniques to infiltrate even disconnected devices by manipulating radio wave frequencies.
Van Eek freaking and the whole nine.
Yeah, no, yes. That's actually why one of the parts of the thing I was just talking about, the secure program that they found, the HAP high assurance platform. They also disable the microphones on any computers running in a secure fashion that the NSA uses. That's obvious to disable the microphones at that level, but it's not only to disable the obvious picking up conversations, but also to disable hacking through the microphone, because hackers have been able to inject code through the microphone and actually take over computers that have never connected to a network.
Well, Mr. Minsky, wherever he is, will hopefully he's staying on top of these things. It sounds like a new edition of the book needs
it needs an update. It needs an update.
It might, but I think if you read the last paragraph of chapter 8 and you apply Minsky's principles for how to secure a computer, I think the NSA, A, they would look on approvingly, and B, I think they might learn a thing or two from it.
Yeah.
That's just what I'm saying. We'll have information regarding D.F. Minsky's The Nature of Systems, Volume 1, in the show notes, of course. We've subjected our listeners to a lot of who we love, and we're very
absolutely
glad you're listening. We've
especially to Kletu.
Could that have come out any more like it sounded like I was being forced to say it?
Because
we do love our listeners.
Absolutely. Why else would we do this?
That is such a great question.
It's for the listeners to educate.
It is. What did they learn from episode one?
They learned the style that they aspire to, at least for Klaatu. So I gotta
get into that comment.
Do you want me to just read it to you? It's quite unbelievable. I think
what we need to do is take a break.
Take a break.
And okay. we'll take a quick break and then we'll be back. And all right. Klaatu, this is for you, man. And we're probably mispronouncing it because it's probably not a name designed to be spoken by the human tongue without pulling it out of your head and pulling it out of your mouth and tying it in a knot around your head. But this is the Alien Brothers podcast with me, Rutiger.
And me, Casper.
And we'll be right back after these important messages.
All right.
The Alien Brothers podcast with Casper and Rutiger.
Okay. We're back.
We're back and live. All right.
And boy, listener, unfortunately, you missed a good old time during our break.
Oh yeah,
but maybe, you know, who can say what the future will hold? Except all you would get is the is Rutiger's side of it, because Rutiger had the foresight to keep recording. Because that's the thing about recording. Once you start, you really got to think if you ever want to hit stop.
Well, I did. You didn't. And now you've got more editing to do because of that, I guess.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough two clicks.
Yep, well.
And one hit of the delete key. But this is the Alien Brothers podcast. Welcome back.
Welcome back.
I'm Rutiger.
And I'm Casper.
And we're today's title is Strictly Hacking, although we certainly have deviated from that. But that's okay, because that's... You know, our style is wild. I would say the Alien Brothers podcast style.
It's wild. It's loose.
What are the? It's impetuous.
It's sporadic.
It's spastic. It's a little freeform. I like to think it's, you know, sometimes it's a little funny. I think I have fun.
I have fun too. I hope the listeners have fun. Most importantly.
Yeah. I mean, because I can't imagine how badly a person would have to hate themselves if they're listening to this and not enjoying it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I bet that can be said for anything.
Although the truth, you know, when you think about it, when you think about the rise of Howard Stern, you know how that all played out. He became number one in the New York market because the people who loved him and the people who hated him listened, because everyone listened to him. Both his detractors and his fans. And his detractors listened to him because they wanted to be angry and they wanted to hear what outrageous thing he was going to say.
So that's what
he says in the book Private Parts, and I have no trouble believing it, actually.
So no publicity is bad publicity.
Exactly. You hit it. So as promised in this segment, we're going
strictly
to
hacking.
Strictly Hacking
and Howard Stern.
Do you ever see that movie Strictly Ballroom?
No, I did not have the
me neither.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks for bringing it up.
I have no plans to, but in this segment, we got a nice comment from one of our listeners, and Casper's going to be reading that. Later, we're going to talk about some early hacking we did in life, which I don't know, certainly in my case, if it will actually qualify, but. You will be the judge, and I don't mean you, Casper.
Okay, good, because I don't like to judge.
Are you sure you're recording?
Yeah, I'm recording. Why?
All right, just checking.
You doubt me. You always doubt me. I'm live and direct.
It's
live and direct.
It's a simple mistake anyone could make. when we're having too much fun. So we'll do that, and who knows what will happen after that. I suspect
we did a sound check and we confirmed everything was working, and now we're rehashing this old chestnut.
So, on the topic of security and where our computers and other devices come from, I'm sure any listener of this show, maybe less so the general American at large, but I think anyone under a certain age certainly knows this, but a lot of the electronics, consumer electronics and business electronics that we use in this country are more so consumer electronics than business electronics are manufactured, assembled, or otherwise turned into finished goods overseas. Samsung, a Korean company, is a huge player in the North American market, and Apple, known for designing their stuff in Cupertino, California, manufactures a shit ton of it in China.
In Foxconn factories. Thank you. Thank you, teenagers, for working overtime. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
We want the iPhone X now. We want it.
We thank you for keeping the price of the for so many years, keeping the price of an iPhone under $1,000 until it became time for it to become $1,000.
You passed the savings on to Apple. Thank you, Chinese workers.
But I'm going to clear up any potential confusion there is right now. I am grateful, okay, because I think life is improved by the smartphone, okay? I think even though it's a dichotomy. Technology is, when you get down to the fundamentals, in every scripture, in every philosophy.
You're absolutely right.
In every work of art, in every story ever told, what is technology fundamentally? It's evil.
It's like the knowledge, the apple, the forbidden fruit, the Apple logo we were just discussing the other day.
Yeah, and I don't just mean Apple's products. I mean technology in general.
Oh no, absolutely. I was just drawing the metaphor with that.
Yeah, and what the ability to kill on a mass scale, as opposed to having to line up tens or hundreds of thousands of soldiers and have it be a matter of numbers and fighting in a traditional style versus making an automated machine that can kill thousands or tens of thousands rapidly, right?
Right.
So, and if you're a fan of Lord of the Rings,
absolutely,
that's a very, or for anyone else who is,
who isn't a fan of the Lord of the Rings? Come on.
Well, there are few and far between. There's some people.
Okay. I'll stay tuned.
Well, I mean, one of the major themes, of course, is that technology is an enabler of. It's used primarily in those stories as a instrument of to do evil.
Yes.
There's really no examples of it where it's used affirmatively. It's or for good. It's nature that's good. It's coming together of different peoples that's good. It's selflessness that's good, and those things are good. There's no question. But
it's like when they put the ring on, they would gain super abilities, but at the same time, the target was on them because the Eye of Mordor could see them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or they cut down all the trees to make war machines.
Yeah, right. Right. Right.
So, anyway,
that's China in this case.
That's pretty much every civilization that's ever been.
It's everywhere, but that's another story. So, going back to how were we going to start the second segment?
I'm going to start it with a quick story that some of our listeners know, some might not, but it has to do with, so there's a company called, many of you might know it, called Huawei. It's not spelled that way. It's spelled.
Is that the X-U-A-W-E-I or something?
I think it's. I thought it was H.
Oh, yeah.
H-A-I-H-U-A.
I know. H-U-A-W-E-I. That's what it is.
Something like that. It's H-U-A-W-E-I.com. It looks like you want to pronounce it Hawaii.
Hawaii.
Okay. But it's pronounced Huawei. And they're kind of like they're kind of like China's Dell with some of China, like HP thrown in, some other things. They manufacture a lot of stuff, and that includes computers and storage
systems.
Like
Dell plus like Motorola plus like Hughes modem plus like IBM. They own a lot. I mean, they're multinational networking and telecommunications equipment and services company is what they are.
Are you reading their webpage?
I'm just looking at the brief description.
I wanted
to see how to spell it for the listeners.
Because I appreciate you doing that, and I'm glad we're working as a team on this, while being like 50 plus miles apart. See, that's technology doing good. But the reason I bring this up, and I haven't thought about Huawei in a while, although they pop up in the news more and more because there are Huawei products at use in America, is that a few years ago, more than 5 years ago, but less than 10 years ago, a notable... And this is not secret knowledge. This was reported on pretty broadly. You're probably familiar with Symantec, notable old-time computer software security.
Do you mean
antivirus.
Norton?
That's an inside joke for the true hacker geeks here that would remember what's his name. Peter Norton. Peter Norton. I bet. I don't think he's real. I think he's like Carmen Sandiego.
There's another nerdism for you. Obviously, you've never seen the show. It wasn't during your time.
Well, I used the program. I played the game, which is more important.
Well, I did both. I watched the program and played the game. And that's why I know how to pronounce it.
What's your position on Mavis Beacon?
Teaches typing.
Oh, you're quick with the Google, aren't you? So anyway,
that's straight off the cuff, sir. Straight off the cuff.
Did you hear
any keys typing? Nope. I remember Mavis Beacon. Well, I used that program. So going back to Huawei,
Symantec had a strategic partnership with them because Symantec at that time owned a company called Veritas, which they bought in 2004, which made data center data integrity and data loss prevention products, what we would typically call backup products. And they merged/Symantec bought them, and Symantec makes a product called NetBackup, which is kind of like the 800-pound gorilla of big company, big boy backup products, although it has competitors, and it has a lot of competitors that do certain features better than NetBackup, but that's not important right now. What is important is that Symantec wanted to make an appliance that ran NetBackup. Appliance meaning a server that's got the software already installed and to some degree configured, so you didn't have to go buy a server, install it, license it, set it up yourself, make sure it met all the specs. You'd be given something out of the crate, and that would be predictably performing and built to a specification to do a certain... It was a backup appliance,
yes.
So it would run at a certain throughput, it would store a certain amount of data, do deduplication and stuff like that. Interesting, in an interesting choice, Symantec chose Huawei as their strategic partner to provide
the server hardware for the appliance. Uh-huh. So a Chinese computer company with, let's just say, with it goes without
unlimited
saying
resources. Fairly deep
unlimited resources provided perhaps by China's government, providing
bricks, baby.
Servers, providing bricks that have that are running backup software that's storing corporate data. So eventually someone that went on for a while, I don't know how that the idea that maybe that wasn't a good idea, having the computer manufacturer for a American company's backup products
produced
storing. Right. So that changed, that relationship ended and they went another way. But it the reason I wanted to bring it up and dramatically over explain it was because you were mentioning the influence of overseas manufacturer and the risks that are involved when when we're taking something that, you know, we can deconstruct it and reverse engineer it as much as we want, but the people, we got smart people working in America, brilliant people, and you know, guess what, so do all of our enemies and frenemies or whatever it's called. You know, it's, you know, America does not have a monopoly on brilliance, I guess is really
the moral of the story. Absolutely.
So, and someone at Semantic probably got fired. You wanted to read Klaatu's comment, right?
Yeah, I do want to read his comment, and I think that will explain quite a bit here on the Alien Brothers podcast. So,
and for those of you just joining,
welcome.
Go back and start, but Klaatu has been, I think, our only commenter in response to episode one. Is that correct?
Yes, and it is a very bright, glowing comment, and I was very humbled by it.
We need to do something special
for him. I thought...
Or her!
Right. I thought that this was a joke, actually, by you, because it was so glowing. So
I would never do anything that.
So yeah, but I looked into it and it appears to be somebody else who posted some on Hacker Public Radio. And here's his comment. I'll just read it to you briefly. And it's called Shows Like These. It says, it's episodes like this one that make me want to quit podcasting because I'll never reach this level of greatness. It's so disjointed and natural that you think it couldn't possibly have been planned, but it's so coherent and persistent that there's no way it could have been scripted. The characters in it have mysterious backstories. Quote, you saved my life, Casper. Quote, they cut to empty commercial breaks. They come up with a name for the series in the episode itself. They talk about how they'll talk about movies, but then barely talk about movies. They talk about video games, but can't decide how to categorize them. The hosts barely even know one another's handles, and yet they pull through. It's gripping and triumphant. This is some amazing avant-garde audio. Well done, Alien Brothers. Well done.
Well done, Klaatu. Thank you. Yeah. You know what? That made my day, and it makes me triply ashamed that I didn't go out and read the comment right away. And boy, doesn't he really? I mean, he's really got our number. He pretty much he pretty much wrote the elevator pitch for what certainly what that episode was, and probably how it's going
to
go.
I'm trying to keep it topic based. I'm trying my best.
But we're here. But we've just heard that that's not necessarily the way to go. Who can say how?
Yeah, I mean, we're just doing this. We'll get more feedback. I know that keeping it on topic was something that I'd heard offline from another listener. I think
offline from another listener. How interesting.
Yes, it's highly secret. Top secret. Different dimension.
Well,
probably shouldn't talk about it.
You know, it is possible that in episodes X and Y, some of those things that we alluded to.
What about
to
Z?
Come
you
up,
gotta zip it up.
Okay, so Klaatu, thank you so much. We gotta do Klaatu. I don't know what we're gonna do. We gotta do something.
I mean, you said something about a prize or some for naming, but that's separate. So.
Yeah, that again, for those just joining, the line from a movie is white meat, dark meat, all will be carved. Thanksgiving, name the movie that comes from. And yeah, the prize is guaranteed to underwhelm, but it's
the thought that counts. It shows that we care.
Yeah. Get yourself very much in a "it's the thought that counts" mindset. I think you nailed it. So early life hacks.
Sure.
Tell me.
Tell me,
Casper.
Early life hacks.
Not life hack.
No. Oh yeah. No, but hacking and
or life hack.
Just keep it with hacking in general. I didn't have any exposure to hacking on the Amiga platform, just because it did not have a modem, so there was no way to get other information other than what you would buy at the store at that time, and platforms were inconsistent. I never got a modem. Modems were becoming new they seemed to be just coming on in the late 80s for the Amiga platform. But it was kind of dying out at that time as well. So, but with the PC, we eventually got AOL, and that was a haven for file sharing. It was like the original Napster, essentially, because AOL, you could upload whatever you wanted, and it was all stored on AOL servers. And all you would have to do is advertise in a chat room the software you would want to get, or the software that you had, and someone could get an email and then download that software. So you were getting full speed from AOL servers, which wasn't much. We're talking about 14.4, 28.8, 56K came later, so. You're still talking about some hours to download something pretty small in size now.
I'll preface it with, I forgive you because I know you're about a decade younger than I am, and bless you for that. I'm so happy for you. But I'm pretty sure that IRC and just straight up bulletin boards were probably the original file sharing platforms.
Absolutely. Like, yeah. No. I also did dabble a little bit. I did get one BBS number and kind of did a little bit on that, but not much. In my area, I didn't find much on that scene, but yes, you're absolutely right. The freaking scene and the whole BBS scene was very lively way before AOL. You had Gopher, you had all those other things. So yes, absolutely.
Well, maybe I'm more of a if that's considered hacking. And again, I need to do my homework. I ran a bulletin board for like 8 years. I mean, and the comedy is for three or four of those years, running that bulletin board was what I used as my quote unquote service work for National Honor Society. So mm-hmm. I would just sign my own slip saying, yeah, I run a bulletin board, which had like 10 chat boards nobody used. And okay, we're talking up to 1991, which is when I graduated high school, so you would know how old I am. And so at a whopping, let's see, originally 20, but later 80 megabyte hard drive, and it was pretty much all pirated Mac software.
and apps. And that was awesome. I didn't think of that as very hacky though, because you know I was using the White Knight bulletin board software, and you just downloaded it and paid your shareware fee, and you were off to the races. It was a piece of cake.
Well, the hacky part of it was that there were certain programs developed for AOL. So they're the most popular one, which people may remember, was AOL, which had a bunch of different scripts to do different things. For instance, if someone else had the AOL program, you could do something that would trigger like a Snoop Dogg soundtrack. They also had like automated scripts where you could message everyone. It was basically phishing software. So you could say, hey, I'm a TOS administrator. Please give us your credit card information. This is, you know, well before that, you know, the public was informed of these sorts of things. But I did know some people that actually did that sort of thing and used credit card numbers that they would get online. I never participated in that activity, but I think that kind of goes into hacking. That's more of social engineering. Phishing, but it's definitely a way of hacking, I'd say.
I also knew people who did those things and did not do those things.
Yeah.
One of my best friends to this day ran one of the biggest pirated Amiga software boards.
Oh wow!
Do I dare shout it out?
The statute of limitations. I don't think anybody's killing for Amiga. Yeah, I think you're good.
Oh, the statute of limitations on.
I don't think the Amiga corporate board is going to be coming anyone.
It would be grand theft. It'd be a felony. Well,
just you can explain the hypothetical situation. If you would.
So, yeah, he ran the bulletin board out of Northern Virginia, and his users were primarily overseas, and he would refer to them as the Euros. This was back before the Euro currency, but they're Euros.
Oh,
they're
European. Okay, got it.
And this was in the early days of the U.S. robotics. We're still talking pre-56K. Yeah,
28 was big. That was actually a big part, like in the movie Hackers, for anyone who remembers that. It's like, oh, you got a 28.8. I might have referenced that before. Yeah. I apologize.
He had a U.S. robotics, what was called dual standard, because at the time, getting 9600 baud up to 19.2 and beyond required one of two different competing compression algorithms, one called V32 and the other one called HST, if anyone remembers that. And the dual standard was the one that they wrote, or that they made, that actually implemented both of them versus buying a modem with one or the other. So they could basically charge 1.5 times the price for a manufacturing cost that had zero difference whatsoever. But it's not, as I'm often fond of pointing out to certain people we both know, you're paying for intellectual property and R&D, you're not paying for hardware. But anyway, I ran a bulletin board. So
overclocking. That just came to mind as well.
So you overclock things?
If I can, yeah.
If you can, what determines on any given opportunity if you're going to you do this personally or for professional? I can't imagine it happening at work.
Oh no, never, never in a production work environment at all. That would violate. Mm-hmm. Any employee user agreements or anything you'd sign, I assume. But for gaming, I have an unlocked motherboard. It's actually quite old, before this Intel ME stuff. We're talking about a quad core, old CPU. But I have a dual GTX 970s, and those things keep the games humming. So so that is overclocked from 2.6 to 3.4 gigahertz. So it's a way to kind of overcome that hurdle when people impose, like Intel will essentially print the same chips but disable certain cores. The manufacturing process is the same, as many people know. They just pick the higher grade ones for the higher class, or they, you know, the 7700s as opposed to the i5s or the i3s.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, who's gonna? It's the only thing that makes sense manufacturing wise. So you overclock by what is that, about 20%?
Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
So you maybe have 30, like,
I don't know.
So I mean, so what's going on cooling wise in there? You got like glycol hoses spurting things on you?
No,
like putting a nut in your eye.
No, I never went into liquid cooling. I did look into it, but it's too much hassle, and there's fluids and electronics. I just don't trust myself with that. So the system I have is air cooled. The fans are quite loud. I think you know the computer I'm talking about. When it's on, you can certainly hear it. It's completely on air, but it's mainly used for gaming.
All right. And about how often does it like blow a gasket and just panic?
Oh, never. It's solid as a rock.
Solid.
I actually have a
solid as a rock.
Yeah, I have a lifetime warranty on it, believe it or not. It's an EVGA. They had some series. It's an NVIDIA chipset. And yeah, it's a great product.
So when you or anyone overclocks their system, is it mandatory that you put those absurd like ground effects lighting kits into them?
Oh,
into the case?
No, not at all. Mine has none, actually. It's just a it's a black box. That's all.
Okay. I mean, to each their own.
I will admit, over the years, my computer cases, as well as many things, have gone more conservative. So maybe the computer case is an extension of that, but I don't know. It's just more simple. I don't need the distraction.
Yeah. I mean, and you know my preferences. I think the consumer computing stuff I buy is already a work of art anyway. Why would I want to modify it?
Well, that's that's your opinion.
For anyone who hasn't picked up yet, Rutiger's a big, I will not say fanboy, but I like my Apple products. I like the way they make me feel. I like the way they work. I like the way they look. What can I say? I mean, very simple.
And to each his own.
I
respect that.
I like the wall. I like that walled garden. That can maybe be a whole nother episode if it hasn't been covered.
Right, and that
better by somebody else.
And
you know?
I think that's the one shout out I'll give to Klaatu, who gave us that glowing comment.
Word.
Yeah. I really found the name of the site just amazing. I also love the layout. And again, that's GNUworldorder.info. If you go to it, I think it's run by the guy that gave us that comment there. He's got his own podcast going on there. He does everything open source. He is
the codecs. Will you do me the favor of
sending it to you?
If you didn't talk, sending me that link, you can just SMS.
Can I?
Because I'm never going to be listening to this show.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm sorry.
No, I mean,
thanks to the 2.5 listeners we have out there.
Actually, in all seriousness, though, and I should have said this earlier, it crossed my mind, but then I crossed my mind differently. Hey, Klaatu, I'm pretty sure you were just saying it as a compliment and a comparison when you said, you know, it's, and or maybe just completely sarcastically, which I would totally dig, when you said it's, you know, shows like this that make me want to get out of podcasting. Do not get out of podcasting, even though I've yet to hear your podcast. Do not. It's every. I don't know you.
No,
I'll state one of my life philosophies. You know, not 80% of everything is just sitting down and doing it. You know, the result is so highly unpredictable and impacted by so many things beyond our control. No matter what we're doing, I'm not just referring to podcasting. That it's. But I do take that as a compliment, but just please don't actually do that. It does remind me, actually, Steve-O said the same thing about one of his friends who's a skateboarder. He's like, this guy is so good, he made me want to quit skateboarding. So I know it's a common phrase.
Oh, just yeah. I say the same about Wondershowzen. When I saw Wondershowzen, which was a show on MTV2 for a limited time, you can probably find clips on YouTube, I thought, wow, I never want to make a TV show because that is perfect. But that's just my style, I guess. So that it's the ultimate compliment. I it made my day, definitely.
Yeah, I need to get over that way of thinking a bit, because it holds me back from watching a lot of shows, because in my case, I'm such an arrogant ass. I'll watch, you know, Rick and Morty, and I'll be like, yeah, this is what I should have been doing.
Oh yeah, that's another show that for me, I'm like, oh man, that's the perfect, that's another show that would be up there with Wondershowzen.
Yeah, Rick and Morty.
Yeah.
Rick and Morty, man.
Absolutely.
Props. So, okay, those were some kind of like teen hacks. I'm going to take us, we're going to go back. We're going to go deep. We're going to go deep.
All right.
So I guess this is pretty hackerish compared to the, you know, the typical kid, but also just kind of a feature of the time. So I started, even though I don't do much of it now, frankly, although when engaged in IT type stuff, I do program. For anyone who doesn't know, maybe the first time I mentioned, I actually do have a computer science degree that I've, and a math minor. Well, okay, I don't, okay, listen, I'm one class short of the math minor. From my perspective, I have the math minor. Now, it doesn't matter, because I'm terrible at math. It's a joke that I have a math minor. And this is at an accredited university, okay? So,
Rutger, if it makes you feel any better, I have a master's in, like, information systems, and I was highly impressed with the code work that I have seen you do. So just take that for what you will.
I know, I'm aware of the code work you've seen me do, and I know you're being insincere, but thank you.
You were just learning Perl, I believe, and it looked good to me.
Yeah, because I wasn't using Perl like these lunatics who think it's something funny to write obscure and unintelligible Perl. I was using it like a legible language, you know. Which is why I am gonna learn Python. When I started dabbling with Docker, I'm like, okay, this is the time. Yeah. I just need to figure out a project. But then I got a job working at a grocery store, so I had to derail that for now. But because this is much more rewarding, what we're
the
doing.
The Alien right Brothers but Python podcast is where it's at. I mean, all the kids are talking on the street. It's going down.
That was a segue just to get me away from where I was. So back when, so my point being,
no one's ever asked me, even during the hundreds of hours of my life I've had where people were interviewing me for various things, you know, when did you start coding? Because I'm not known for coding. I'm known for, you know, for inventing
architecture.
And also, I mean, don't forget my contribution to inventing the whole field of data control. Okay. You know, so that I'm proud of that.
As you should be. Yeah.
You know, pride.
I did read the chapter you gave me of your novel on, it was about storage and computing, I think, fundamentals, if I remember correctly. It was pretty well written.
You've just outed me as being D.F. Minisky, but that's okay. Nature of Systems, we'll get it in the show notes. I'll say there's up to a 10% chance we'll get it in the show notes. But the first my introduction to programming was if anyone else ever had one of these, I'll be impressed and would love to see a comment on it. It was called the Bally Basic Home Entertainment Center, and this was a console that was probably a cohort in time to the Atari 2600. Don't have it in front of me. Hopefully you're pulling it up right now, looking for Bally home console or something. And you could get a basic, you know, the basic programming language, right? You could get the cartridge for that. Now, the thing didn't have a keyboard. It had this second 2-liter bottle of Harris Teeter Diet Cherry Cola is going down.
You're doing that again?
What is going down? Oh. Going down way too smooth. It had a keypad, so typing.
I can see that. I'm looking at a picture now of it, actually.
Yeah, it was okay. We'll parking lot the discussion of how awesome this thing was and how vastly superior it was to all other. It has, as you can probably see in the picture, which will be in the show notes. You're making a list of all the show notes, right, Casper?
Oh, of course. I'm jotting them that down. Did you hear my pen?
Lois Lane. Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for capturing that. It's a good thing we're not capturing it any other way. Okay. All right.
Okay. Got him.
So it's got a keypad on it. So if you wanna, okay. So when you put the basic cartridge in,
hello. Oh, there you are.
Is that static you're making?
Sorry, we just had a disconnect.
Sunspot.
Solar. So the Bally Professional Arcade in 78.
Right. That's the one I'm talking about. Yeah, you take the basic cartridge, you put it in there, and then it's got an overlay, you know, like a cutout overlay that goes over the keypad. So it had some macros for like standard basic command. I'm guessing print was probably one of them. Go-to was maybe another. As far as I can personally remember, print and go-to were the only two commands in BASIC, although I'm sure there were some kind of conditional constructs too. So I learned BASIC on that.
Nice.
I was pretty awesome. But I
still are.
But 78. Okay, so I was five, and so I wasn't really doing anything. I was basically like copying programs out of the code book they give you.
Right, but that's the first step, you know.
Exactly. So I made it play Green Sleeves. I thought that was pretty cool. That's my
story. One night I spent the whole night once I discovered HTML, I was just the whole night I was like, oh man, you can see the source code for all these web pages, and you can basically take whatever you want and, you know, like, you know, make your own web page. That was a great experience.
I remember that epiphany. Yeah. That was pretty cool. And when I was at Virginia Tech, my third year is when the web broke. I mean, when it exploded. It's when Mosaic came out. It's when we finally had serial TCP/IP coming to like all the dorm rooms. I think it was SLIP at the time. I don't even think we were using PPP yet. And I was in the fourth year. I was in the first HTML class that Tech taught. Now, just to sound like an old codger, I'll mention that everything I had learned by the time I left Tech, any kid interested in computers due to the web and availability of information would know by age 12. Just because, you know, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And maybe I would have been the same way. Probably not.
I don't know.
Frankly, I don't know either. So, the Ballet Basic was awesome. I mean, the games were vastly superior to almost anything on the Atari 2600.
Oh, absolutely. And it looked like it had a pretty broad color spectrum range for that time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
The last thing I'll say about it is that two things. One, the top of it had this plastic kind of opaque smoky, I guess you would say, lid you took off.
Like a cassette, kind of cover or record player kind of thing, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And that's where you put the game cartridge, the things you
bought.
So it held them in there, which was genius, okay? And the cartridges were about the size of a cassette tape.
Yeah,
You know, even you know what that is with like the two spin.
It was like an 8-track almost,
except way smaller.
Oh, yeah, true.
And way less fidelity.
Yeah, actually, awesome. it's about the quarter of an 8-track.
And then the controller was a pistol grip, and with a pistol trigger. And then on top was a 8-directional joystick that also rotated. Okay, so you had rotation, you had 8-directional D-pattery, you had it fit in one hand, and you would use the other hand with the knob / D-pad on top. It was amazing. So like with the football game, you would be moving your quarterback around with the D-pad, and then to rotate it, you would be rotating the angle of his arm for how he was going to throw.
Oh, wow.
So if you ever played Atari 2600 football, the original one, not the real sports football that came out later, which was where they improved all their, because they had competition, it was like gunfight, right. Like just the standard gunfight game was dramatically superior because you could control the angle of your shot, you know.
I was not aware that they had that type of input peripheral at that time. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it was. They were way ahead. There was nothing like it really until Coleco basically emulated it with a very similar but enhanced 4-button pistol grip controller with a joystick on top that also had, I should say, 4-trigger controller. It also had a keypad on it, which I guess was because the standard ColecoVision controller had a keypad too. And its launch game was the Rocky promotional tie-in boxing, Rocky 3 boxing game. So like the top trigger would be the hard hit, and then like the jab and all that bullshit. And the game's
all right. Thanks for taking us on that.
And the controller,
that's cool.
The controller
that you learned basic
on. The controller was
and stuff.
Yeah, and then I learned Logo and more basic when I got my ColecoVision Atom, which that's a, I'm not even going to go there. If anyone knows what the Atom is, they know what a disaster that was from a technology, marketing, everything down the line perspective. And that combined with Cabbage Patch Kids is what helps puts Coleco on the path to being acquired by Kenner, I think, or their destruction in some way. And also, I finally learned Pascal and C after I got my Max. And then I went to school and wrote almost everything in C.
Cool.
And there you have
it. There you go.
It's my life. And then I haven't written a line of C since school. I think I can promise you that.
Yeah.
I just haven't. My career has not needed that. It's all been Bash, Sed, Awk, Perl, and soon Python. And if you want to consider HTML and its CSS and its derivations coding, then well,
yeah, sure.
Throw that in there too.
Yeah,
there. That's not much hacking. I didn't build those boxes. What are they called? Blue boxes, where you hold them up to the phone to get free phone calls. That was before
freaking. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I knew one trick where you could call a number and then hang up the phone and it would make your phone ring. But that's not really hacking. I think that was just a telephone trick.
My friends did a funny hack one night when they came over to my house and we were playing this game called Police Quest. I don't know. I'm sure you remember.
It sounds familiar, definitely.
Well, it came from Sierra Online, so it had the mechanics of King's Quest II, etc. Except you were a cop and you had to follow cop procedures, and they were in the office playing it while I was in the bedroom watching a movie or something. And what I didn't know is like they would get to the next scene and get stuck and just keep calling the helpline provided by Sierra, where it automatically gets charged to your phone bill. So like, there was like 75.
Oh no!
They just went through the whole game that night. They're like, we beat it. So I'm like, how? It's like we kept calling the helpline. I'm like, you.
Oh dear.
Yeah.
I mean,
No wonder.
Oh, that. Yeah. Sorry to hear about that.
With friends like these.
How
could things have turned out differently? No, I'm kidding. Of course, it's not their fault. I'm a mess.
It's okay. But the important thing is that you learn from your mistakes. So you now have a block on your number for the Sierra Online help desk. Is that correct? The charge service.
It's not even a person, you know. It's like a menu.
Hotline. Oh, okay. I never called this toll line if you've reached this point.
Yeah, it's just like a binary tree. The first question kind of figures out whether you're halfway through or not, and then that just continues. So those fuckers,
man. I don't like people that use books and stuff to figure out. I mean, I understand it if you run into something. I've run into things in like Elder Scrolls where I've had to look it up just because it's a bug, and I've had to like manually do stuff to game files to get it to work. But that's a different story. But I don't know. It's just I think you should at least at first try to beat a game, you know, with what's given to you, if you can.
I totally agree. I do everything I can to not go to the
cheats,
the Bethesda supporting wikis, unless I think I'm like glitched in something. Or
Game Genie. Remember Game Genie? Wasn't that a early form of consumerist hacking? Selling.
Was that like?
What was Game that? Genie was something you would hook up to your Nintendo, and it.
It went between cartridge.
Yeah. That was like an early form of a commercialized form of hack.
So what would you do? You would pay them extra money once you had the genie to get like unlock codes.
No. It wasn't on that level at all. It was just you would buy the Game Genie and it had a whole bunch of codes for a whole bunch of games that were already out. I mean, Nintendo was a pretty solid like primary platform for a long time. So Game Genie had plenty, you know, they listed what games they would work with and everything. So it wasn't a surprise, but it was all built into the hardware. It wasn't like you had to call a number or pay more money, get a code. It was just like $50 or whatever it was to get the thing.
I remember having a original NES controller from, I want to say, a third party, where in addition to the standard A, B buttons and the D-pad, and the original NES I don't think had bumpers on it.
No, but, it did not.
It also had buttons that were basically like just rapid fire. The same thing as like hitting the A or B like repeatedly
right,
at like three
right.
different speeds. So track and field games instantly became like
right. It
no less than no fun because you were just like it was fucking. Oh, stupid.
The anyway. Off market peripherals always they generally have that option where you just like hit something and it does something over and over and over again.
Do you have any fancy peripherals?
Gaming
peripherals? Like a 3D mouse?
A 3D mouse? Like a trackball?
I had a couple trackballs.
I mean, I use a trackball, yes. For gaming and for work.
Really?
Yeah. I thought you knew about this. I use a Kensington trackball.
Kensington, that's who it is. Are they still?
Yeah, they're like, still around.
Are they like the premier trackball?
They're solid. They're still making the same product. $100, man, you can't beat it. I've got two of them. I've had one for 7 years, one for 9 years, still kicking.
So how do you clean that?
You just
thing?
Take the ball out and clean it. You just spray some Windex or whatever. I'm sure that's not the proper way to do it. And if there is a proper way to clean a Kensington laser mouse, trackball laser mouse, please let us know. But I just spray Windex in there and take a paper towel and just kind of like wipe it out. Gets all the kind of grime out and stuff. Yeah.
That's one of the special things about you. It's 2017 and you're still using quality Kensington products, man. I'm glad to hear that they're still on the street or were 7 years ago.
And 9 years ago. I mean, they're still out. As far as I know, they're still kicking it, doing the same old product. Solid. So a lot of people are getting into older like keyboards and stuff. Maybe that's just a hipster thing. I don't know what the deal is. They like the clickety-clack or something. But, yeah.
Well, the last thing I have about hacking now, and it's not, I don't know, I don't know how hacking-ish it is, because I wasn't there for the original incarnations, but in my noise-making in the last 4 and 5 years, I've you know, picked up quite a few programs that are emulating basically old analog, you know, like the Moog synthesizers and
yeah, I like those.
You know, so it's all now in the digital domain, except you're dragging and dropping wires between LFOs to, you know, make noise, which is, I think you would agree, the best way to describe the music I make. So that's kind of that's kind of like a hacking music thing, you know. And there were people that were hacking like their Yamaha DX7s and stuff to make them do, but like the whole
like NES emulation in music to make music out of that, and people had done a lot of crazy stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what the phrase is for where you like take apart like a video game or some other piece of electronics, and then you wire, you hack it to make it make crazy sounds and stuff. There's a, it's
Radiohead. Yeah, no, I'm joking.
It's called, like, all our listeners already know.
Well, that's the kind of stuff you see on like Hackaday. Like, there's a website called Hackaday.com, and that's the kind of stuff that they do.
Maybe it's called Chip Core or something like that. Shout out to The Advantage. The Advantage. Do you know the music of The Advantage?
I do not. I'm unaware.
Okay. Well, maybe, I don't know. Are we going to take this anywhere? Do we have anything, or do we want to shut it down with some outro music from The Advantage? What do you
think? I think I just want to drop one thing I was thinking about. When we were talking about hacking, and to kind of take it to a philosophical level, if anybody's familiar with computer simulation theory, and if anyone has made it this far into the show, one could say that we are all just bits of code hacking our way through life.
Indeed, that the universe is a running system, a simulation.
It's entirely possible. And Neil deGrasse Tyson cannot argue against it, even though he does not believe it's true. It's entirely possible.
I've only just begun exploring the whole, are we living in a simulation philosophy? And I've obviously done so much research. I'm just embarrassing. I mean that sarcastically. I'm just embarrassing myself by even bringing it up. But I can't remember the philosopher's name who has the best known argument for the moment. I just know it has 3 points in it. And yeah, it seems like the main point being, maybe this was a different argument, but the curve of the argument was very intuitive, which is problematic of a lot of philosophical arguments. Sometimes the more intuitive they are, the easier they are to break apart. But the idea is simply this: we humans are building simulations and have been doing that for a long time. B, we get better and better and better at them. C, and this is the part you can't disprove, because there's the problem of resolution, meaning literally how small can we see, right?
Yes.
So it's, you know, so it follows philosophically from a certain point of view that if we're making simulations and we're getting better and better, then at some point certainly if you look at the world around us now, we're making more and more increasingly higher resolution simulations. Okay. So the point is, at what point, what would stop us short of the catastrophic end of a civilization from making a simulation that had inhabitants that did not know they were in the simulation? So then that takes you to the
right.
Philosophies behind the Matrix and the texts that they use to kind of build.
And
that
I think that's a good place to leave it, because that brings us on the fringes of the conversation that we were discussing the other night, when we probably took about 2 hours just trying to narrow the scope of what we would talk about if we were going to talk about AI and, you know, define AI, what kind of AI were we going to talk about, where is it going to go, what is it, and that. So I thought hacking would be a little bit more direct. I know we kind of diverged on this and that, as we often do, but...
No.
But, you know, we're trying to keep things on topic, so we're doing our best here, folks, and we appreciate the comments again. Those are great.
We appreciate the comments. We love the listeners. We hope you keep listening, and that'll inspire us to keep podcasting.
Yeah.
So the conversations that we have
which I enjoy, Casper. I assume you do, because you keep subjecting yourself to them. Otherwise, they would just happen, and in the ether, and then they'd be gone. And what led to this podcast was one of the things was like, man, we had some great conversations. Wouldn't it be great
to share them with the public?
We're already talking about geeky stuff anyway.
I mean, you know,
man, we're so fucking smart. We're doing the world a disservice by not getting this out there. It's basically well, that's what you were.
Well, saying. I think that you're smart. I wouldn't say that I'm smart by any means. But I mean, we probably feel the same way about each other. I don't know. But I know that I always find myself having interesting conversations with you. And I thought it's something that should be recorded if people enjoy it. And I know now that there's at least one listener out there. Klaatu, again, thank you for your kind words.
Yes.
Amazing. And so, I'm just, if we could, you know, make one person's day, then that's worth it for me. So, and
don't give up podcasting.
No, not at all. And I've listened to your stuff. It's good, man. Keep doing it. I really like the format of your website. It's really, really cool.
And thanks for the comment, even if you're a bot, and you probably are.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's new and what's not, but that's a whole nother podcast. So everybody stay tuned for episode 3.
All right, Casper, man, I love you, man.
All right, Rediger, man, love you, man. And so I'm going to just click and sign out here.
All right, have a joyous holiday. Thanksgiving.
Absolutely. You too, sir. I'm sorry that we will not be able to interact in IRL or AFK, but I'm glad we got to do this.
Indeed, I am as well, and thank your parents for spawning you for the least of rich selfish reason for saving my life this year. And in other ways leading up to this year, but that again for another time.
Right. We'll let the mystery continue on that.
We'll let it percolate. Right. This is the Alien Brothers signing off. We'll see you soon. And we need a sign off thing, like standard sign off. But for right now, we'll say later.
Can I say good luck and good night? Or did I just
go for it?
Okay. Good luck and good night. Again.
Peace.
Out.
The Alien Brothers Podcast with Casper and Rediger.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.